Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Ryan Malar, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Yeah, baby.
Yes. Crowd is on fire today.
Look at this crowd. Even louder.
I'm telling you, when the Chargers and Eagles win,
oh, it's a good day.
Crowd's excited on a Monday.
It's a good day. 8th of November, Monday morning. As usual, you're here for the Net Live. I'm your host, Kevin Barnett, joined in the home court by Chris Geeter McGee. And I believe if the internet is hanging on in Mother Russia, we have Reed Pretty.
What's up, guys?
Nice.
Wow.
Reed Pretty in the house, here to speak with us, at least for the first part of the show. So that's good stuff. So most of the NetLive crew put back together. Dan Menn, far as I know, don't know if he's even on the show anymore. He's got only one good leg. I don't know if they had to amputate or not.
I didn't even get a text back from him.
No, he's hurt. I've seen some cast photos. Of course, Dan Madden, a longtime member of the show, blew his Achilles, had surgery. We hope he's going
to
be okay.
And I just want to throw this out there, Reed. He's never a distraction. Anytime you want to be on with us, Reed.
Nice. I appreciate the love.
Hey, we've got a big show planned for you. All three of us are here. We've got some good stuff going on. Women's national team in action, world championships. We'll have an update on that. We're also going to have Jay Hossick, friend of the show. He's over there scouting. He's assistant coach for the Penn State men, but he's over there scouting.
He's calling in
for the women. We're putting him in.
I
We're
like going to
call him. We're going to call him about 10:45 our time. We're going to give him a call. So we'll get some good information from him on what's happening over there. We're going to look around at FIVB Phuket Open.
Yes.
Phuket Open happened this past weekend. Great results. Nicole and Carey, second tournament.
Winner.
And we've got Mary Wise, Florida head coach, ranked number one, one of the all-time greats.
I call her one of the deans.
The deans, yeah?
Of our sport, especially in college women's volleyball. I mean, 24 years on the job, 20 of them at Florida, one of the winningest coaches ever. She's, you know.
I'm putting her on the Supreme Court
Absolutely.
Of volleyball coaches.
100%.
We have to do that. We'll have a Supreme Court of volleyball coaches. There we go. That's a whole other segment. We'll argue over who would be
just
denied.
Like up and down.
Who
created
denied.
A stir last week. It's
yeah,
fantastic.
Up and down with a little bit of action. We got a lot of email, a lot of reaction from some benchings.
What did Reed think about that?
I don't know,
did
Reed.
Did you fight offline?
Reed, did you listen? No matter what. You said, quote, I want no part of that. That was last week.
Yeah, you know, my thoughts on that whole thing is that if you were good enough to be at the national team at any particular time, then you're probably a good athlete, and you're going to be able to morph to whatever era you're playing in.
Blah,
and those guys happen to be the best at that time. And,
blah,
and
blah.
Hey, that's the way it is. They figure it out.
Such a PC answer.
Hey, buddy, we had you starting, okay? So you
decided
this. It's okay to have a swagger and be cocky about it.
I put Stavertlik off the team just to keep you in there, okay? Bob Stavertlik,
I like the Timmons Stanley debate on the Facebook page. I thought that was good. That's good barroom talk right there. I mean, at the bottom line, you're not going to go wrong with either one of those guys.
Somebody wanted to start both of them. I don't know how you start two opposites.
It's just tough for me not to start Big Red, Reed. It is, as much as I love Clay.
My only thought was you put Big Red in the middle.
Ooh.
He played some middle. You put Big Red in the middle, put Clay at the opposite. Would that work? Could he block is my question. I don't know.
Did you like us having a talk with Craig Buck in the locker room saying, listen, if you want to be a part of this team, get a good attitude, and we'll put you on.
Yeah. You know that kind of spilled over into a conversation with me and Loy here. And we brought up the point that the guys from the 80s are going to, even the middle.
Uh-oh. There it goes.
You know,
there he is. He's out.
I actually wanted to hear what he had
to say. I know.
For the first time in months.
I wanted to play some music just to play him out.
Oh, man. I actually was like, okay, I want to see what he and Loy had to say about this.
Hey, we've gotten some grief for our technology here over the couple of years of the program. It's gotten steadily better, but now we're dealing with a whole other animal, Russia.
Russia. I think the problems we have are part of our charm.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of what people like about us.
It's our character. We're going to try and add him back in. We'll give him one more shot here.
Loy made our team.
Yeah.
Loy and Stork.
Yeah. That's good. Ooh, that's gonna
we kept Ludi from the gym, I think.
Here's what's going to get interesting.
We kicked a couple guys out of the gym, which, I mean, people aren't going to be happy about that.
We can't even get him. I think he's gone. One of the interesting things for me is as we go along, we're going to do this for the 92 team at some point. We're going to do it for the 84 team. I don't know if we can go that far back, but 92, 96, 2000, 2004. So I got the question.
You got to cut yourself. It's going to be amazing.
That was the question. What are you going to do when you have to put yourself on the team or not? And we'll see.
When I got to the home court today and you told me we're going to save 92 for maybe next week, I got to be honest. I was a little relieved because I looked at that list. A lot of my friends are on that list.
Mm.
I'm going to have to cut them.
Yeah.
I might cut some friends today. Yeah. Thank God we're pushing that back to next week.
What are you going to do with Samuelson? What are you going to do?
I can't talk about that right now.
Well, okay. I had a little bit of reconsideration. On last week, so I was looking at some of them. Did you have any regrets, omissions, changes you would have made, Geeter? Did you think about that at all?
I did think about it.
Yeah?
I thought about it, and I stand by what we have.
Now, here's the point I want to make. To belabor the cart issue, which is where we differ a lot, right? You made a comment about 148 tournament wins.
Uh-huh.
Three gold medals.
Three.
Whatever, you went through his whole resume,
just
right?
Sprinkle three golds out there.
Yeah, you went through his whole resume. But this is 1988 cart. Okay, I'll give him the two gold medals, 84, 88.
Yeah.
We'll give him those.
Yeah.
And I said he was a Riley Salmon type guy. Riley Salmon is two matches away from being Karch Karai at that point.
Can I say one thing?
Two matches.
Those are two big matches.
In 04.
Those are two
beat
big
Brazil
matches.
In the semis, go to the gold against Italy.
I had Riley on the team.
Two.
I just have Karch starting.
No, see, that's why I can't start him. They're right there. They're the same guy.
Listen.
He's not Karch 148.
Do you remember? The beach doesn't even exist. I saw the documentary on the women's soccer team, Meaham and all those great players that were just legends for like 20 years in the game.
Yes.
When they were at the World Cup against China, he said, "Am I going to be the one to not have Meaham take the penalty kick?"
Still trying.
She was surprised that she was one of the gals that took a penalty kick because she had been so bad at him. He's like, "Am I going to be the idiot? Say I don't have her kick and they lose." The guy would have never lived that down. Are you going to be the idiot that kicked Karch out of the gym, Kevin
that's
Barnett?
That's a dangerous situation. Because you're not picking the best player. You're picking a name. Go back to your example.
You're
all
picking
women's
the
soccer.
Best
Hold
goal on. Scorer of all time. She's the best. She's the most goals in the
now.
History of soccer.
It's about now.
I'm not saying she was phenomenal at that time. She just wasn't doing well with PKs at that time. Karch, on the other hand,
okay,
you're going to be the guy to not have him in the gym?
He's in my gym. Jeez, I ain't here.
Yeah,
he's in my
What's
gym.
Your problem?
I'm joking. He's in my gym. I said he's in competition, but I am by no means in the starting lineup. He's going to have to earn that spot. I can't look at him physically and say, this is my guy. I can look at Big Red and go, that dude can compete. That dude, he's going to start for me. He's fast. He does these things. That's going to be something to put on the court. I can't look at Karch in context of today's game and say, absolutely, this guy's going to start. No, he's in my gym.
Uh-huh. Listen, Craig Buck is in my gym, and he's got
only
show
for
me
a few
lot.
Minutes. Still, he mouths off too much.
No,
today.
Buck,
you're out of
well,
here.
I'm just saying. I mean, Ryan Millar and David Lee
right
now are my starters.
You're putting a quick hook on Buck.
And Buck has got a hook. Buck belongs in that group, but I want to make sure he's able. He's a team guy.
Is he going to work in the weight room?
Is he going to work in the weight room? Is he going to be a team guy? And I don't want one-legged Danny kind of just light me up on these emails all day. I can't have it in that chat room.
All right, we got Reed back. Reed, you were going somewhere, a discussion between you and Loy about this whole 1988 gold medal team on today's national team. What was Loy's take?
Well, our thought was just about when you start comparing the middles of yesteryear to now, those guys played through the whole back row. We're hitting pipes. We're passing the ball.
Oh, true.
So for sure, those guys are going to be a lot more well-rounded, and that's got to count for something.
I don't think it counts for anything. And here's why, because it's an age of specialization. So it doesn't mean, like a guy like Craig Buck, if you could pass, great, doesn't matter. You're not passing. We're not putting you in over the libero.
Karch Karai, his will to win, his competitive
We're
nature,
still here.
Second to none, okay? Just looking at you, looking
We're still
at
back
me,
there.
And
You're
people
still
can't see
Karch.
This because we're not big time enough to have us. you know, where people can actually see us on the internet, do our
soon.
Show. But he's starting with a guy named Reed Pretty, and that is and that is final. And Riley,
hey,
it's on.
And I just want to throw in that Nick Lewin's my team manager.
Oh my goodness! I think Reed, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. I can't hear you.
I mean, I got Riley, Spurtlick, Karch, and Reed as my four outsides, and I'm sticking with it.
Does Reed want to start talking? Because I got the music all queued up. Mention Nick Lewin's name again. We'll just keep with the music going. I think it's a great discussion. I think it's lots of fun, and we'll do it again.
I can't believe that I brought women's soccer into this conversation. I mean, that is something you'll never, ever hear from me again. But I
want to make one more point about that.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, Brianna Scurry and the Hope Solo situation. Brianna Scurry, the name, right? The name gets put in against Brazil in this huge match instead of the hot, new, young thing, Hope Solo. How'd that work out?
Hey, buddy, that's coaching.
How'd
Sometimes
that work out? That guy's
a moron, and you say, I'm going to go with the one who's had success. I got a feeling she's going to deliver, and she didn't deliver. That's coaching. Sometimes you roll the dice, Barney.
Hope Solo
you
had won 23 straight matches,
hey,
given up like two
bad
goals
move.
In 23 sets.
Bad move
matches.
By the coach.
Bad move?
Bad move.
Did he get fired?
I believe he did.
One of the worst.
I don't know. I'm not up on my women's soccer knowledge.
That's worst of the year move. Probably worst of the decade.
You know what? It ended up
working
out down
move.
The line because she came back and was the goalie for the gold medal team. So, you know, it changed her attitude.
Who, Solo?
Yeah.
Solo was fine. The only thing that was her bad attitude was that she got benched in this giant game in the favor of some name that was over the hill and wasn't any good.
I'm not going to say she wasn't any good. She had a lot of hardware, buddy.
She got
a lot of hardware.
She got shelled like 4-0.
I mean, don't you think the team had something to do with that as well? I mean, I'm not a...
Sure. But
it's not like I'm playing soccer on the weekends and I'm going to break down the defensive schemes, but I got to think there were some holes in the D, bud.
We're going to save this for the NetLife Soccer Edition. It'll all work. Same name, same everything. It'll be just fine.
Our soccer show's on Thursdays, 9 a.m. to 10.
That's right. All right, Reed mentioned it, and we need to talk about it because the AVP is officially dead. 100% dead, bankrupt. Bankruptcy declared by RJSM, primary owner, 72% holder.
I hate the way you look at me and just say it's dead.
I
mean,
I know it hurts
like
your heart. I don't want to hurt you.
In the throat.
Oh, man. Shanking you.
Reed, if you
style.
Can see the way he's looking at me, he just keeps saying dead really loudly.
So it's been filed for bankruptcy, both AVP Incorporated and the subsidiary AVP Pro Beach Volleyball Tour, Inc. The debts for those organizations were listed at $7 million and $5 million, respectively. The assets for the entire thing were listed at $400,000. That's furniture, vehicles, and volleyball equipment. So not too much left there. This is all an article that we found on the internet, so it must be true. A quote from Canyon Seaman on Nick Lewin was interesting to me. It said, he's a wild card whose actions are unpredictable. That's Canyon Seaman, COO, AVP, on owner Nick Lewin, or managing partner of RJSM, Nick Lewin. And I think, yeah, he's a little unpredictable. We know that from this show. Maybe he was talking to Canyon about the bankruptcy or things going out of hand. He said, hey, wait, hold on. I'm in the bathroom. Got to clean up here. That's essentially what he did on our show. So, I don't know. My question is, will the AVP come back? Will we see that name again, or are we beyond that name? It's going to be something else.
I think it comes back as something else.
AVP's name is gone.
I don't know if it's gone necessarily, but I think it comes back as something else. I just think it's time. But I think that I think the name has a lot behind it, and I think it means something to a lot of people. People will argue that and say, well, then you're in debt $7 million. But
12. Actually, I take it back. 12. I take it back. 11-6. I mean, they have $400,000 in furniture.
You know, being with some of the players this weekend at Lee LeGrand's wedding, I think people thought that was the right thing for Nick to do, just because I think it's time for us to put that to bed and maybe we can move on now. I mean, because I've been hearing a lot of rumors that Nick wants to come back and run a tour with five stops.
That was the rumor.
That, you know, and I don't know the validity of that, but
I think that was before
that.
The bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I doubt that happens. One interesting note that I found in there was that 80% of the revenue was from corporate sponsors. And I think that goes to what I've said on the show before, that it's not really a business. It's an ad vehicle.
Yeah.
Great ad vehicle, but it's not a business. Doesn't have income from the typical sources you'd have for a business, or in this case, a sporting business, if you look at the NFL. Concessions, ticket sales, memorabilia. Yeah. And until you can change that model around a little bit, and start moving product a la surf or start moving tickets a la every other sport, I don't think you're really going to get back to any kind of measurable level financially that's going to support a large number of athletes. I want to see that happen, but there has to be a different model. Somebody has to approach it differently.
Agree, 100%.
Reed, what was your reaction upon hearing this news? Any comments on what had gone on there?
Yeah, you know, I guess it was kind of the inevitable that we kind of all thought it was heading that direction. I think we all hoped that there was going to be a way to pay back those debts, but maybe this is just a way to clear the slate and move forward. Unfortunately, that comes at the expense of a lot of people and their money. Hopefully in this off season, though, that we can change the model. The model can be looked at and tweaked, and we can go forward. What I'd like to see is what this show is really trying to do is hear firsthand from these people like Canyon that have been involved. And we've reached out and talked to Canyon quite a bit. And maybe now he's in a position to be able to speak freely and let us know what was going on the inside.
I think people need to go back and listen to some of our earlier shows back in August when it all went down. I think it was Friday the 13th it went down, which puts our show on the 16th on a Monday. We talked to Jason Hodel.
140 people in the message chat room.
Big day. We talked to Mike Dodd. We had those two on the phone that day. The following Monday, we had Nick Lewin. I think you need to go back and listen to some of those shows, and you'll get a better feel for what's going on. Of course, we've continued the discussion throughout, and we will continue to update what's going on with the beach. There are a lot of different things happening. We're looking to get a call from Hans Stolfus, who's involved with the PBVA, Pro Beach Volleyball Association, I believe it is.
I believe next week we're going to get someone on from USAV from an email that I've received. So hopefully we can make that happen because they're now making a push and have announced that they're going to have some tournaments.
Yeah, and that's been the big announcement. Just came out this morning, a little press release. USAV is going to run 4 to 6 beach tournaments in conjunction with IMG, sports marketing firm. They're going to have a 4 to 6 stop tour. I imagine this is going to be a part of Olympic qualification. Well, we'll get more of the details, but it will be interesting to see who fills that space because, you know, they're looking to fill that space, USAV with some opportunities, the FIVB with some opportunities, Corona Wide Open. We've talked about that a little bit with some of the opportunities.
Yeah, you're going to have Carson Billy. You're going to have USAV.
And Steve Lindecki, who's involved
Steve
there with the Corona Wide Open.
Maybe someone else comes in as well. So there's going to be some options.
Right. And I've said I don't think for about 3 years we're going to really see any clarification. I think it's going to take 3 or 4 years for this to really shake out as to what happens.
I agree 100% because I think when we come back this next year, and I'm talking about 2011, it's going to be on a small scale. It's not going to be a 16 tournaments on ESPN and ABC. That's not happening. It's going to come back 4 to 6. And it's going to be USAV. It's going to be Karch, and it's going to be maybe somebody else coming in with that AVP name or a new name. It's going to be very small scale, maybe a little TV, if any at all. I think USAV would definitely, especially if you have an IMG partner, you're going to want TV.
Yeah.
But I think the other group that comes in, obviously with the way the model has worked in the past, they're going to have to come in with a new business model. Maybe it's no bleachers, whatever it is, but TV is going to have to be on the back burner.
Dan will be happy. No spaceship. Yeah, it is going to have to be different. I'm interested to see what happens. I hope that it comes back. You know, I get accused of being the grumpy old man on the show sometimes about stuff related to volleyball and the business of volleyball, but things aren't good right now for beach anyway. FIVB is very good. And I think that's where the top players will go.
Yeah.
And I think that you'll see them be there. And the question will be, can you draw them back? Can you get them to buy into stuff going on here? I think the PBVA is a big part of that. We'll talk to Hans about that. I think it's important the players organizing together. Reed, I know you had some thoughts on the players and what they're doing or not doing right now in this void.
I want to talk about how important it is for the players to unite. And when a press release comes out like this, it kind of hits me in a few ways. One, it's kind of exciting that there are options for players. But on another scale, I hope players are involved in the making of this deal. And I just wonder where the players fall. It's kind of that paradox that you see that, you're happy that there's an opportunity to actually play a game. But at the same time, you know, where do you fall in line as part of, are you the commodity? Are players the commodity or is the tournament the commodity? What here is the traded item and where does the value for the players?
Hold on, I want to get to the commodity issue in a second, but tell me why you want the players involved. Why do you think that's important?
I don't know about the players being involved, but I mean, what other profession are you sitting at home kind of waiting for answers to see if you actually have a job? a tour. I mean, maybe that happens more often than not. And I'm the first to say that we're not owed anything. But when there's discussions going on about your sport, for which I believe that the players are I believe the players are the commodity. I know you're going to disagree with me on this, but I believe they are. I believe that without players, you don't have a tournament. You could have a tournament, but you need players to be a part of the tournament. So I think they're part of the financial equation. And I'm not saying that they need to be 80% or 60% or whatever. I'm not telling you a percentage, but to not be at the discussion table at all, and which I'm just assuming, maybe they are at the discussion. Maybe the pro beach or maybe the volleyball beach reps are part of those discussions. But it's kind of that weird paradox where it's just like, man, super pumped that there is a huge company like IMG and USA Volleyball that are partnering up. Now, one side note that I read in there is that both parties are equally responsible, I think it said, to sell sponsorships. Well, IMG better be pulling some more weight because we know USAV is not – that's not their strong
– Oh, there he goes.
just when he gets going.
There he goes. That's it. Oh, Rush is killing us today. Reed makes an interesting comment about the commodity issue, and he and I talked about this, and he feels like the players are a commodity. And I'm going to agree but disagree with him. I'm going to say there are a couple players who are a commodity. Carey's one of them. Phil and Todd. I think Misty. Maybe Nicole. I'm not sure. She's kind of on the edge of that. There are a few players that are a commodity that if you add them to your tour, to your event, I think it's a huge game. But there are several other players, even down to a John Hyde and Sean Scott. Great volleyball players. I don't think they have any sort of traction outside of the volleyball community. So I don't think they're even a commodity. I think if you put John Hyden and Sean Scott in the Olympics with a USA jersey on, it's exactly the same as putting Ed Ratledge and Ryan Mariano out there with a USA jersey on. Not in quality of player necessarily, okay? I'm not debating about who's better on the court. I'm talking about as a commodity saleable in the marketplace to the broader scope of sports consumers in the United States. People who watch the Olympics watch beach volleyball just in the Olympics. I don't think there's any difference between those two partnerships. When you put a USA jersey on and you stick them out there, they come on the TV. People are watching in the same numbers no matter if they're there or not.
It's about stars, too. And someone was mentioning this to me in Hawaii. You know, commodities are stars. And when you look at sports and you look at snowboarding, you think Flying Tomato. You know, you think Sean White. You know, each sport has its share of stars. And Misty and Carey have obviously crossed over during the Olympics and been stars. But you definitely need more. You know, you need people to want to root for somebody or to know somebody. And I think that's where maybe we've failed in creating these stars. We do have some great personalities and some great commodities out there. And I believe we need to be pushing those. That's when you hit mainstream. And that, I mean, people know surfers.
That's what you're talking about.
Andy Irons exactly passed away and people knew this.
Yeah.
Whether you knew surfing or not, people knew who Andy Irons was.
Yeah, you big know, loss to the
Kelly
surfing
Slater
community.
Is an icon.
Yeah.
You know.
But surfing is a little bit similar. You have guys like that. You know 2, 3, 4 names. Same thing in volleyball. You know 2, 3, 4 names.
Yeah.
You know the Golden Girls. You know Misty and Carey. And if Carey brings Nicole along, you'll know Nicole because Carey will get a lot of attention.
Sean and Jake were in the Olympics, but they're not household names.
They're not. No.
Sean's like a YouTube sensation inside the volleyball community, but he's not, you know, known nationwide in
right.
terms of like, oh, that guy's a stud, he jumps 44 inches, hits right-handed, hits left-handed. You know, he's got the Raiders, you know.
So that's why I say the commodity, they're not a commodity.
No.
The players, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who's in the tournament. The tournament is more the point, unless you're talking about a select one or two. That's it. Hey, you mentioned the loss of Andy Irons. We also had an unfortunate loss to the volleyball community, something we talked about last week on the show.
Yeah, we had Mitch Sadowski on and a couple people on about Rance Jones, and the tournament was this past weekend. Rance did pass away. We're sorry to inform you. I think most of you already knew, but Rance Jones passed away at 3 a.m. I talked to Mitch.
Just this morning.
Yeah, just this morning. I talked to Mitch 10 minutes before we went on air, and he called and wanted to check in and, you know, thanked us for having him on last week, and such a class act. And we talked a little bit about Rance in the tournament, and he said it was an amazing showing. Thousands of people, 47 men's teams, 26 women's teams. Misty May Trainer and her husband Matt showed up. You know, Misty played, won the tournament with a local Deerfield Beach girl named Melissa Roberts, played great, had a lot of fun.
Cool.
They raised a ton of money, and it was just a great showing for the volleyball community. They went to the hospital, told Rance about this. You know, he's in a coma. and he passed away a few hours later, and that's just his legacy. It's like he almost wanted to see it through, and now they're going to do this every year. And he really was – he was a great friend to a lot of people and a great guy. And he's – you know, I've been thinking a lot about it lately. He's what beach volleyball is about. You know, the guy's a firefighter. He was – you know, a married guy. He was just a guy that, like, loved volleyball, even though he had another career, but he was a grinder. He'd show up and play in qualifiers and make it into the
ADP. It was his weekend.
Yeah. And he loved the sport. It wasn't about the money. That's, I think, our core, you know, and I think if we can blend our core with the stars of today and somehow everyone be on the same page, I think our sport is great because of people like Rance Jones. You know, I think that those are the guys that you go, man, what a great dude. He loved the game, and he loved to play. I could get behind that guy. So I think beach volleyball is going to miss him, but I think his legacy is definitely going to live on, and they're going to do this tournament every single year. And, you know, definitely a sad day. But as Mitch said, you know, it was a good thing. You know, it was time for him to go. And as sad as you are, this guy's legacy is going to live on forever.
I think you touched on a great thing there. It's not about – we were just talking about commodities. I think it's about community. And one of the things that makes beach volleyball saleable is that great feeling when you're at the beach, you're with a bunch of people who really love what they're doing, you're in a great setting, out in the sun, having fun.
Sure.
It's got a great vibe to it, and that's one of the things that can be sold. I'm glad to hear the tournament's going to continue on.
Yeah.
And certainly you can appreciate that, yes, he's gone, but really the state he was in, I'm sure it was extremely hard for people who knew him and, you know, being a firefighter and playing volleyball to watch what was happening to him in his body. And it's not the same person by that point.
And as Mitch said, no way is it a coincidence. This happened in early April, and he's been fighting and hanging on.
Yeah.
And then basically the night of the tournament, you know, I mean, that's an amazing thing.
There's so many examples of that throughout life when you look at elderly people who make it through an anniversary or a birthday or a holiday and then pass away. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the human spirit that we just don't have a handle on yet. Not at all. All right, The Net Live, we're going to take a little bit of break here. We'll be back. We had the College Volleyball Weekly coming up. We're going to have Dave Reed talking about an exciting week in college volleyball. We still have Jay Hossick coming in to talk about the Women's World Championships. Great stuff there. And Mary Wise. Number one in the country, Florida Gators head coach.
Big get for the show.
Mary Wise coming in and joining us here on The Net Live. We're glad you're here. Thanks for tuning in again. If you're getting us live, great. We're on iTunes. It's free. Search The Net Live. We'll see you in a couple minutes. Parents, do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan?
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench. Sub yourself in. Pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
Thank you.
the volleyballnetwork.com.
Good stuff. Glad you're here. I'm going to try and get this stopped. There we go. Welcome in. Welcome in. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it has been an interesting show so far. We had a lot of good debate about the 1988 men's team from last week. Go back and give that a listen. Get it on iTunes. We're on iTunes. If you go in there, search the iTunes store, The Net Live. Just put that in the search bar. You will see us, a little The Volleyball Network logo. You can get that. It is free. It's a high-def version. Comes out about a day after we do the broadcast live here on The Volleyball Network. So it's an opportunity to listen in anytime you want, wherever you are. Also, check us out on Facebook. We've got a good Facebook page going. Lots of questions throughout the week. We'll kind of throw out topics that are related to the previous show or maybe the upcoming show or maybe just in general. Little news and tidbits that we pick up from around the sport of volleyball. People are sometimes posting little videos. Matt Gardhoff's putting up some weird stuff. Fun little brackets and pictures and all kinds of fun stuff. If you're into the sport, if you're into the show, you'll love our Facebook page. So get on there. Be a fan. The Net Live on Facebook. We had great conversations this week about the whole 1988 gold medal team, national team discussion. There was fun stuff about cards, about Eric Sato. We had Gary Sato on there pumping his brother, talking about how E. Sato would dominate, that he'd be the best bouncer in warm-ups. I wonder if that's true.
I had E. Sato on the team, just for the record. Okay?
I said I'd have a hard time putting him on a trip. Very hard time.
You looked little soggy dog Eric Sato in the eyes and cut him. You
I did.
Do that.
I did.
No, you didn't.
I did. I cut him. I cut him. He's out. Gary, I know. Gary may not talk to me ever again.
Gary, you and I know the truth. Barney can't handle the truth.
No, I need you on that wall. So, we do have early in the show here the College Volleyball Weekly in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association. The Net Live is proud to present the best each week of collegiate volleyball. Wait for it. Florida Gators music. Yeah! Go Gators! Very appropriate for today's show. Big finish. Pow! Hey, somebody else sent us some good music for that. Said, hey, play this instead. I can't get away from the Go Gators.
Especially with Mary on the show later today.
You're going to hear that later for sure. All right, joining us, as usual, one of our loyal correspondents from Colorado, ESPN.com's Dave Reed. Dave, thanks so much for once again coming on for College Volleyball Weekly.
Hey, no problem. Glad to do it.
Hey, big week this last week. Number 2 Cal goes down to Southern Cal, USC, number 7. And some other good action. Tell us what you've been watching.
Well, you know, obviously I think everybody's got their eyes on the Pac-10. I'm not going to go too deep into that because I want to let Holly's not coming on now.
No, I got to warn you about that. We had a big time change because we had Mary Wise, so everything got moved around. You are the today.
Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, USC taking down Cal at Haas Pavilion, you know, that really shook things up in the Pac-10. We're back to a tie atop the standings again because Stanford won both their matches against UCLA and USC. Again, what it shows is this tournament at the end of the season is going to be wide open, and so is the race in the Pac-10. You know, don't count USC out now because they've proven they can win anywhere.
Dave, do you think the loser of that Stanford-Cal match, so when they play a little later on, the loser of that match will most likely take second in the Pac-10. Will they still get a top 4 seed?
You know, that's a good question. I think it kind of depends on what USC does. Because if USC gets up, either ties Cal for second place or, gets past them, then I think you really got to give the second seed or number 1 seed to USC. But, it's going to be hard because you've still got some other teams around the country that are deserving. Florida's going to be a number 1 seed as long as they don't stumble coming down the stretch.
Nebraska, most likely.
Yeah, Nebraska's got to be a number 1 seed. And, and right now, just because I think the Pac-10 has been stronger throughout the non-conference schedule, I think they're going to get a second number 1 ahead of the Big 10 this year, only because the Big 10's beating up on each other.
And Illinois still seems to be in that leader spot, even though they lost DeBuehler, their best player.
Yeah, but you know what? They had a tough match against a really hot-hitting Northwestern team this week.
Yeah, lost.
So that really jumbled up the Big Ten. So now when Illinois visits Penn State on Saturday, Penn State with a win would tie Illinois for the top spot in the Big Ten.
What about a team like Texas now? They've now won 9 in a row. They had a huge win against Nebraska. They seem to be kind of getting it going. They've had some adversity and gotten over it.
You're just pumping your boy, Jerry. That's right. Just your boy. Yeah.
Well, you know what? And it was only a matter of time before Jared Elliott got them going. And, you know, when you look at what Texas done recently, I think what you do is you look to Amber Roberson, who has come on and really started playing well right after the loss to Nebraska at Nebraska. You know, then she's kind of started. She had 17 kills against Texas Tech. She had 16 against Nebraska, and she's really given them the diversity and the balance in their offensive attack that they've needed all year round. And then also Michelle Coker's back at setter and has been there, I think, since like the last 6 matches. And they've really started to gel. So I think whether or not they catch Nebraska to either tie for the conference lead or just finish one match behind, that's going to be a team nobody's going to want to play in the tournament.
Yeah, teams nobody wants to play are those hot teams coming down the stretch. And even though they lost twice this week, UCLA, they lose 3-1 to Stanford, but then they go 3-2 with Cal and really had a chance to win that
overachieving
match. Is that another team that nobody wants to play? And who else is on that list that you think is really heating up towards the end of the season?
Well, I totally agree that UCLA is not a team anybody's going to want to see because, you know, UCLA is probably going to end up as a 2 or 3 seed wherever they go. So they'll probably be forced out on the road. And how would you like to be, you know, hosting the first and second round and find out you have to play UCLA? Wouldn't want to be in that position. The other team that really nobody's going to want to play is Penn State. And what happened is they finally, like Texas, got the balance in their offensive attack that they've needed. Freshman middle blocker Katie Slay, it was just announced she's the Big Ten defensive and freshman of the week. Against Michigan and Michigan State this week, she hit 593, 17 kills, 1 error on 27 attacks. Out of the middle. That's great. They finally found a second outside hitter to go with Deja McClendon, and that's Ariel Scott, and she's a freshman out of Ridgewood, New Jersey. She had a big weekend, too. She had 8 kills, 1 error on 19 attacks versus Michigan, you know, and that really was the important match of the weekend because whoever won that match at Michigan was going to be in a position to challenge Illinois. So, yeah.
Dave, before we get to number one Florida, because I want to ask you about them because we're going to have Mary Wise on in a bit. A team that no one really talks about too much, but you said is definitely a one seed, is Nebraska. They did have that one loss on the road at Texas after winning 18 in a row. With their size and physicality, that's a team that has a chance to win a national championship. Do you think so?
The only person
absolutely
about them at all is Eric Sullivan when he calls into this
calls
show. He talks
show,
about Nebraska a lot.
Yeah, you know what? They've got so much balance, and like you said, they're so physical. They've got a great block, and, you know, when you combine their proficiency on offense, you know, they don't make mistakes, and then you look at what they could do on the defensive side of the net, you know, with, like, Brooke Delano. I mean, she's an awesome blocker. Lindsay Licht is really good, really strong. You know, they're averaging – they've got 3 players that average more than a block per set. And, you know, they're getting 3 blocks per game. You know, they can shut down an opposing offense, and then they really don't have to do anything other than be steady on the offensive side. So, you know, again, and they're going to play at home in the first round, first and second round. So, you know, I wouldn't want to be there. You know, the other thing, Penn State's got in their favor. They've got a regional, too, and I think their winning streak's up to 88 matches now at Rec Hall. So.
Wow.
I mean, they're tough to beat regardless of where you play. You throw in the home court advantage, and it's almost impossible.
You know, I covered Florida a couple weeks ago for ESPNU, and I'm doing my prep for that game, and you're reading that they've gone to 7 national semifinals under Mary Wise. I mean, an incredible number. How many wins they have. They've yet to win that national championship. Is this maybe her year?
You know, it could be, and their secret weapon is Kelly Murphy.
So
no matter what's going on in a particular match, she's got that steadying influence that, you know, she can either run the offense and set up the other players, or she can be the player that they look to get the key points. You know, much like they did at the ABCA showcase. I mean, she was the player that really led them past Nebraska.
You know, so, Dave, you and I have talked on this show about the, you know, how the year Tennessee made it and the year Santa Clara made it, and Michigan snuck in there, you know, Cal, teams have, you know, there's always that one team that kind of rides a wave and gets into the Final Four. I'm going to throw some schools at you, and you tell me if you think they have a chance. Out of these schools, who can be a one that can really crack into that Final Four? Northern Iowa, Colorado State, LSU, San Diego, Cincinnati. Do any of those guys have a legitimate chance to break in there and get to the Final Four?
You know, I'm going to write about them this week. I think the team that might be able to do it is San Diego. They really have a nice 1-2 punch on the outside, or actually on the left side, right side, with Allie Troost and Amy DeGroote. They've got a senior setter. And when they went out to the Hawaii tournament early in the year and lost to USC and Hawaii, both their key players, Troost and DeGroote, weren't at 100%. So I think, you know, based on the fact that they play in a very solid conference in the West Coast Conference, you know, they're going to be a team that they could make a big run, you know, especially if something strange happens in their bracket where, you know, a door, you know, like a USC or a Cal gets knocked out.
Dave, we really appreciate you being here. What's upcoming for this week? What's on your radar before we get you out of here?
Well, I think the big one's going to be Illinois at Penn State. You know, Penn State could win an eighth consecutive Big Ten title, but if Illinois pulls off the victory at Rec Hall, you know, I think then Illinois is finally in the driver's seat. You know, I'm still keeping an eye on the the Big 12, because, you know, Texas is on a roll, 9 straight wins, but they're going to have to get a little bit of help, and the help they need might come from Missouri. And if they can get a little bit of, you know, Missouri beat Iowa State last week on the road, and that's going to be the one that probably the last team that has a chance of beating Nebraska. Nebraska's schedule isn't the toughest. You know, they've done what they had to do all the way through the season, so now they've got a little bit of a break until they get Missouri at home, and then their last match of the year is at Texas A&M.
One little note that I got on a text message was that Stanford had lost Steph Brown for the season to an ACL, and this is, you know, the time of the year where injuries can really play into factor come tournament time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one injury could really throw everything, you know, off. And, you know, Penn State's dealing without Darcy Dorton all year. You know, DeBruyler gets injured at Illinois. You know, how you react and maybe the fact that they had the whole season to adjust to those injuries makes them a little bit tougher now than a team that loses somebody down the stretch.
Hey, well, it'll test your recruiting and find out how good of a coach and administrator you are in your program when you start losing one or two players.
Well, you know what? And that's when you have somebody like Jared Elliott or John Dunning or Russ Rose doing your recruiting, you know, you've got an advantage right out of the gate, because you've got great players waiting to step in.
ESPN.com's Dave Reed here on College Volleyball Weekly. Dave, thanks again for the great info. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Have a good week. We'll talk to you later.
All right. That's it. College Volleyball Weekly here on the Net Live in conjunction with the American Volleyball Coaches Association and the music from the number one team in the country, the Florida Gators. Build it. Oh, we need a camera for you. Go Gators! All right. That's a great one. I don't know. We're going to have a hard time.
Maybe that'd be a new
music
thing on the show. Send us. Send us one that's better than that, and we'll use it. From week to week.
They did. Somebody did.
Is it better than that?
That's what he said.
We're not going to play it until Mary White.
I like that one. Yeah. I like that one.
Someone did, but we're not going to use it today.
That's right. I had to go back to the email and check it out. But we appreciate everyone giving us input. TheNetLive@gmail.com. That's our email address. Send us your notes. You know, you hate us, you love us, you got a suggestion for a topic, someone we think we ought to talk to. We've gotten a few of those from people. We do read them. We're excited to get that information from folks, so we want to know about that stuff. Get it out there to us.
You know, you go on Volley Talk, too, and always post. I mean, write some comments on there, too. I mean, those message boards light up. They hate everybody, everything. I mean, get in there and light Barney and I up a little bit.
Hey, promo the show, man.
Promo the show.
Yeah, get some people fired up either way. Either way, I don't care if you're angry with me. That's fine. As long as you're listening.
See the passion of our sport on these websites. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and that needs to transfer into our show and also into the professional ranks. A lot of the stuff that we talk about here.
Someone on Volley Talk was saying you should be getting more work as an announcer, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you.
Saw that.
Yeah, that needs to – we need to continue
that
frame
of mind. It wasn't even you who wrote that.
No.
Which is amazing.
No, I'm not promoting myself. I mean, I'll sink pretty low. That's a little beyond where I'll go. Hey, one thing I will promote myself, upcoming American Volleyball Coaches Association Convention going to be in Kansas City this year.
Yep.
December 15th through the 19th. In conjunction with the national championship match, I'll be there. I'm going to be doing a little emceeing or co-emceeing and some interviews along with a special episode of the Net Live.
You know what? You know what hurts me and upsets me?
That you didn't know about that till just now?
No. That okay. I cannot go the last few years or this year because it's state championships for high school football in the state of California. I do 3 play-by-play games in 2 days there.
I was going to ask you to be there.
Oh, I'd go for sure.
Maybe you can call in for the show when we're talking to the coaches, because we're going to talk to the coaches. We're going to talk to y'all Americans for the Net Live. I'm going to take the whole studio with me.
Hey, last year before I was a permanent member of the show, you guys had me on that week, and I picked with Russ Rose on the line in the queue. I picked 15-13 Texas in the fifth, and I was off.
You're so close
by a couple of points.
So close.
Carrie was back this weekend.
Yeah, Carrie was back this weekend. Out in the Phuket final event. Phuket Open.
They lost early.
They were the consolation
early and had to play some extra matches and actually groveled all the way through the loser's bracket. I did have some text exchanges with Nicole when she was over there and said she was having an unbelievable time and they seemed to have great chemistry. And to come back and win that tournament, carry only her second tournament back really in 2 years, to be honest with you. I mean, she played in a few with Rachel, obviously, played, I think, five and played one with Brooke. But to come back and win an international event, you know, all the best teams weren't there, but there were still some really good teams.
They faced an Italian team in the final that had never been to a final before. I think the first ever Italian team to make a final. My question to you is, right now, today, is Nicole the best American player on the beach on the women's side? I can't imagine it's Carrie. She hasn't played too much, but I think she's probably teamed with the best American woman player.
Currently. I said it last year that Nicole Brana was becoming the best player. She was the MVP. You know, Misty wasn't back yet. Carrie wasn't back yet. She was the best player. I believe right now she's the best all-around player. You know, I mean, she's not the best blocker. That's why I think she and Misty struggled. You know, she had to go to the left side. But I think when you pair her with the right person and she can play some defense and block part-time and play right side, I think she's a top American player going right now. I think Jen and April right now, you know, a great team. They have the best chemistry. They run quick stuff. They're the best servers. But, you know, for Nicole and to carry to beat them last week, that's a big win mentally. Because Misty and Nicole were, I think, 0-6, 0-7 this year against Jen and April. So even though it's in China in November, you know, a couple weeks ago, it was still a huge win. And then to carry and follow that up with an actual tournament victory, I don't care where you are, it matters.
I love Jen and April.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows I love Jen.
Yes, you do.
But I think that Nicole, when you talk about her versatility, right, left, defense, blocking, the things that she can do, she plays the entire game in a way, in an age of specialization, so many other players don't. I mean, Carrie can play some defense. You don't see her play a ton of defense. Mm-hmm. She's mainly a blocker. But you've seen Nicole do everything. Maybe that's why she's the best.
Yeah, and I think both those teams are physical teams where it's funny. I've gotten messages and I've read boards where people said, can they beat Julianne and Larissa? Well, yeah. Are you kidding me? I mean, Carrie's got 2 golds. Can Julianne and Larissa beat them? Yeah, Julianne and Larissa.
That should be the question, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are a great team and number one right now, but Jen and April can beat them, too.
Hey, the next 2 years are what matters.
There was a span this summer where Jen and April were about unbeatable. They were winning everything, FIVB, winning AVP. They dropped off a little bit, but those three teams can all beat each other. There's no question about it. But I'm telling you, if Nicole and Carrie stay together and say Misty goes on and has family and doesn't come back, they're going to be right there for the gold medal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. New golden girls. All right, we're going to try and add someone else to the conference here. We've gotten rid of Reed Pretty. We're now going to the other side. We're trying to go to Japan, out here to Jay Hosek. I have a little bit more faith in the Japanese internet than I do Russian internet. Hey, are you there, man? It's 4:30 in the morning or something out there in Japan.
Yeah, it is. Can you hear me guys okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. You sound a little hollow, but we can hear you. Are you
okay.
Roommate up? I mean, did you stay up all night? You going to what on earth? 4:45 in the morning. That's commitment, man. We appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. First of all, it's my pleasure to be here. My my roommate Giuseppe Vinci, the catabolic guy for BYU, and he's here with me, and we're grinding. You know, this is it's a long, long trip, and the hours are super long in the gym. And you know, today was the first day we've had off in a while, and I'm not going to lie to you, we spent probably 15 to 16 hours today inside just putting all together reports on the computers and getting all that stuff down. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of grind, but we're okay. Yeah. We're hanging in there.
Okay, so we talked to you briefly, I think, a little while ago. Tell us about your role with the U.S. team, where you started with the tournament, because you weren't with the team, but now you're back with the team, correct? You're in the same city now?
My position with the team, I'm the I don't even know how you describe it, really. I'm the guy that puts together all the scouting reports and talks about the players and tendencies and things like that.
You're the advanced scout. That's what you are. The advanced scout. Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, you know, glorified to some degree. And, you know, what Jamie and Giuseppe do, they do all the data ball stuff. And so I take all their information. I take what I see at the gyms and I mix it all together and I come up with some ideas. So I met Giuseppe in Hamamatsu, which is where our first round was that we were at. We were actually not with the USA team the first week. They were in another part of the country doing their stuff. And so we scouted the first, first five or six teams at that pool in which the top three or top four went to the next round. And those are the teams that USA was going to face. And so that's who we were scouting.
What teams were you looking at there?
We were looking at Czech Republic, Netherlands, Brazil, Italy, Puerto Rico, and Kenya. And Puerto Rico and Kenya were unfortunately not able to move on, but the other four were. And, you know, they're good teams. I mean, you get to that next round, and it's really open to anybody's game. So.
Yeah, you mentioned those teams. Tomorrow, the United States is going to face off against the Netherlands. The United States with a 6-1 record currently through the entire tournament, having defeated Thailand, Croatia, Germany, Kazakhstan, Cuba, and the Czech Republic consecutively, and that was 17 straight matches going back, 11-match win streak to end and win Grand Prix. And then yesterday, the United States faced Italy and suffered their first loss, losing 1-3. What did you see in Italy that gave you cause for concern, or what do you think Italy did well against the United States to execute?
You know, I'll tell you what, I think when you go on win streaks like that, I think you know you're bound to slip up, or I think some other teams are bound to play up above what they normally do in order to get you. So, my hat's off to Italy. They played very well. You know, we, from all you know intents and purposes, probably didn't play the best that we could for whatever reasons. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I saw some things in Italy that I thought we could take advantage of, and unfortunately we didn't execute. And Italy did, and that's just the name of the game. So hopefully we play Netherlands today. I like our matchup against them, but, you know, like I said, it's the second round, and really anybody can beat anybody in any given day.
Tell us about that matchup with the Netherlands. You scouted them, obviously. You say you haven't seen the matches. We know you're in a different city, but tell us about what the Netherlands does and the notations you gave to the United States side.
Netherlands has got I want to kind of liken them back to a throwback team of sorts. They run a pretty high offense. That's not exactly the fastest offense we've seen, but they're real good players. They got good ball control. There's a couple of kids on that team that I think, they got this this Fleer girl who is just she's a beast. I mean, she's only about 6'2 or 6'3, but you know she just flies from everywhere, all over the court. She's hitting red. She's hitting big. She's hitting go. She's hitting slide. She's jump serving, you know, super heat balls. I mean, it's fun to watch. So, you know, every team, I think, has got one player that really stands out above the rest. And for the most part, your role players are the ones that got to step up. So I tell you, it's not going to be an easy match. And I know that Netherlands is definitely going to want to get us. So it'll be tough.
Looking around the tournament, Jay, what are your biggest surprises so far?
Well, I don't know if they're surprises, so to speak. I'll tell you the things that I really enjoy about being in another country and watching volleyball, especially in a tournament like this, you look at teams like Japan and Korea and Thailand. I mean, they're not exactly the biggest teams out there, but they are so fun to watch. Thailand especially, they are running routes that, I'm doing the scouting report, and thank God for Giuseppe and Jamie to have video, because I'm watching these things live and trying to chart them at the same time is nearly impossible if you've ever tried to do it before. So, you know, I'm watching, you know, video 3, 4, 5 times through on each play just to get the routes correct. So they're a lot of fun to watch. I think, you know, Russia has got just an unbelievably solid team. They're probably the easiest to scout in terms of a chart because they're so simple, but they're just so good, and their ball control is just amazing to watch.
Jay, it's Gator. I have a question. What do you think is the most impressive about the women's game right now? Is it the way they're playing above the net? Is it the speed of the game? Is it the physicality of the game? Is it the back row attack? What do you think now sets it apart from maybe 3, 4 years ago?
You know, that's a good point, Gator. You know, that so much talk has come lately about the women's game becoming more like the men's game and starting to see more offense from the back row than you are from the front row. I think the slide is obviously something that the women's game is going to have a part of it for years to come. But you're starting to see a lot more Bics. You're starting to see a lot more Ds. And, you know, and the power game, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the jump float is the new jump serve. And I think a lot of coaches talk about that, and it's absolutely true. The float serve is just it's wicked. And some of these teams have got girls that hit it. And I tell you, the angles that they're finding and the way these balls are dropping and dipping, it's unbelievable to watch. So I think the speed is definitely picking up. They're definitely flying a little bit more. You're starting to see upwards of 3 and 4 people attack at the same time, and the tempo is pretty high. So I think that's neat to see. But it's also, you know, like I said before, it's neat to see smaller teams like Thailand. They have such good ball control, and that usually is the name of the game. They have such good ball control. They can just run these crazy routes, and the setter, just all they have to do is just put the ball in the right place, and somebody's nailing it. So
a couple of little great arms on that team, too.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, you see Thailand, and you think, Thailand, how could they really be that good? And I'll tell you what, if you ever get a chance to watch them, I would highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
You know, it's funny, Jay and Kevin, is that you talk about the jump float serve. You know, in club we use it a ton, and it's so effective. I remember in 1993, Dan Landry, who played with our U.S. men's national team, was at UCLA, and he was the first guy to do it college level.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you guys, the year that they beat us in the national championship, he came out with a serve, and it was a panic for the rest of the country. Like, people didn't you couldn't pass with your hands then. You know, you had that platform out. And I'm telling you, Dan Landry was the first guy that I ever remember at that level. It was 1993 coming out the jump float.
I remember watching that final live, and I remember watching that float serve and just going, what the heck is that thing?
Exactly.
and you're right, you couldn't take it with your hands, and so everybody was just struggling. And wasn't Landry like a bread delivery guy or something like that? Was he getting up at 3 a.m. or something?
Yeah.
With bread and they go to school?
It was amazing. And Al pulled one off that year. It was like Mike Deal had transferred from Santa Barbara and had played opposite almost the whole year and was dominating. And Landry was like their All-American that he had on the bench. And then all of a sudden, the Final Four, he breaks him out. And he had 33 kills against us. His mom came from the Philippines, the first time to ever see
his
players. It was great. Really happy about it. He's just crushing us.
Jay, it seems like serving in particular, it's kind of a cycle because you went from a standing float. You mentioned Dan Landry being ahead of the curve, but then it went to a jump serve. And I know when I was playing in the middle 90s that I was getting a ton of aces in the middle and late 90s because a jump serve was kind of new to a lot of receivers. There weren't a ton of big jump servers. Now there are a ton of big, big jump servers, and you see the receivers have made the adjustment. They see it in their gym all the time. They pass it pretty well, but they don't necessarily see a good jump float. So now the float has come back in to vogue. So is that something that's just sort of cyclical for the receivers that they're not accustomed to facing that serve, and that's why it's having so much success?
I have to agree with you 100%. And you and I played college during the same time. We played against each other once. And you smoked us, but, you know, that's okay.
I'm glad you got in there. I was going to sneak it in.
You know what? I think it's an absolutely great point. The jump or just the float serve back in the day, you know, who was leading the charge in that was, you know, the Asian teams. They had that roundhouse float serve that it was thing. It was like Bugs Bunny pitch, you know, and it would move around and sign signatures. It was crazy. And then you get the jump float, which, you know, Landry kind of started a little bit, but the jump serve, you know, nobody had seen it. And to be honest with you, and I think you guys would agree as a passer, nowadays, I'd rather see a jump serve coming at me going 90 miles an hour than a float serve, because at least I know the trajectory that thing's going to go at, and I got a little time to make that adjustment. That float serve comes at you, and holy smoke. So, I think you're right. I think the float serve, people don't see it that much anymore, and unfortunately, people probably laugh at it. But the people who are making a difference and the people that are stepping up above the rest are the ones that are perfecting it. And that's, I think that's going to be, you know, at all levels, not only international, but, you know, college men's and women's and all the way down to juniors. I think you're going to see a little bit of an insurgence. And Gator, I think you're right. That if you guys are doing the jump float a lot more, I'm sure you're going to be a little more successful than most.
You mentioned the float serve coming over a women's net. It is gnarly. The angles are insane. The speed is nuts. You step in there and try and pass it, it's darn near impossible.
There's a girl named Gamova for Russia. I'm not going to lie.
6 foot eight.
Taller than 6'8". I think she's like 6'11". I'm not lying to you.
No, I've stood next to Katerina Gamova. And she is at least 6'8". Yes, I'm not giving her 6'10", but she's way bigger than me.
Is she hot? Is she attractive?
She's a big girl, and she's tall. She's a nice enough looking girl, I'm sure.
There go all our female callers and listeners. Sorry. Great. Right before the American interview.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, that angle and you know, coaching on it, Gator, I'm sure you can understand. You can make that thing come in a different angle that nobody sees, and it's wicked, that's for sure.
Jay, you've been in Japan now for a little while. This is your first trip to Japan, correct?
Yes.
Give us a little bit of reflection on just the Japanese experience.
I had some expectations, and I also, had an open mind. I've never been here. I've only... You know, obviously seen pictures and read a little bit about it and kind of some research. But, you know, there's a few things that I think really stick out. And one of them is that the Japanese culture, there is such a amount of respect. And not only just for their elders, but for everybody in general. I mean, you walk around and it's almost like walking into a movie where it's like everybody's uber friendly, if that makes sense. And so.
Totally.
Yeah, you get this sense of comfort, and I never ever feel fearful walking around by myself at night if I want to walk around, cruise, and see the sights. It's a much different feel. I'll tell you what else really baffled me when I saw it. I didn't notice it at first, but after a while it kind of set in. There are no locks on any bicycles anywhere, and Japan is, especially Tokyo, it's famous for having bikes everywhere. It's like going to UC Santa Barbara. You know, there's billions of bikes you see everywhere.
Yeah.
Imagine all of those bikes without one lock on any of them. And it's unbelievable. They just park by the side of the road, and then, you know, they go to work or they go do what they're going to do, and then they come back, and the bike's still there. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Japan is one of my favorite countries ever.
You could
eat your meal off the floor of the gymnasium.
And there's no trash cans. You can't find
a trash can, but there isn't a piece of trash anywhere.
Yep.
You drive to a construction site, it looks like you could just move in.
Why this weekend? I got a tweet from someone saying, hey, Barney said you should come to Japan. You're halfway there.
There you go.
Dude. You know, and I'll tell you what, the Japan fans, and now we're in Tokyo, and Hamamatsu, you're a little bit on the outskirts and you're seeing some volleyball. But, now I'm in Tokyo. This is supposed to be the real deal. I am not lying to you. And, Geeter, you will appreciate this because you've been in this situation. When Japan plays, there's about, 12,000 seats.
Amazing.
It is like the Lakers in the World Championships. There are lights. There's laser beams.
Yeah,
there's
boy band.
House music. Yeah, boy bands are going on. And it's like a whole concert. It's unbelievable, and the crowd goes nuts. And it's one of the coolest things to see.
We had a boy band, big time boy band, performing. It was a huge deal. They show up at the hotel, stay at the same hotel, immaculate hotels, by the way. You stay in like 4 and 5 resort hotels.
Yeah.
They show up, they park all their cars out front. It's a bunch of Lamborghinis, Porsches, Ferraris.
God bless them.
Yeah. Like, you guys are awesome.
I love when people are working the game of life.
Good stuff. Well, hey, Jay, thanks so much for checking in with us. We really appreciate your insights. Good stuff.
You're welcome, guys. Have a good one. Thanks for the call, and I'll talk to you guys on the other side.
Dude, get some rest.
Yeah, really good work by him.
I'll try, man. Right. I probably got to stay up and do some more reports. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Jay Hossack, advanced good scout stuff for the USA Women over there at World Championships. So we mentioned it, the USA Women, record of 6-1. Now, if you look up what their record is on the FIVB site, FIVB.ch, and you can click on World Championships, you'll see that I think they're listed at 4-1 or something close to that because they took away any matches that did not occur against a team that made the second round. So that record changed a little bit. But overall, 6-1, the United States, coming off a loss against Italy, will face the Netherlands coming up in their next match. We know most of their matches have been live streamed on fromsport.com, the word from, F-R-O-M, the word sport.com. So you can check them out there. Unfortunately, there are no television rights that have been bought here in the United States. It's not on Universal, or I'd be working, and you won't get a chance to see it but live on any kind of U.S. station. But fortunately, you have fromsport.com. You can check it out on there. Good stuff from Jay Hosak. I like that. Japan is a great place. If you ever get a chance to go to Japan, 100% do it. No questions asked.
I think Sully was in the queue, too. He was texting me. You know, he wanted to get in there. I don't think we got enough time for him.
No, we don't. We don't. Hey, we're going to be right back. Mary Wise is next, head coach of the Florida Gators.
Sully, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. We've got more important people now, Sullivan, to the back burner.
Yeah, maybe if you can hang on, you can call us in 25 minutes.
We'll be right back.
Hate the gym? Well, we do too. CrossFit South Bay is an elite strength and conditioning facility with a no-gimmick approach to fitness. The CrossFit program will have you running, jumping, lifting, climbing, and moving in dynamic and powerful ways. There are no machines, ellipticals, TVs, or mirrors. We train everyone from professional and collegiate athletes to soccer moms and retired teachers. With an average class size of 10, you get personal coaching and training. We sweat together, get fit together, and have a darn good time doing it. From beginners to weekend warriors to professional athletes, CrossFit South Bay is for anyone wanting to be in the best shape of their life. Visit us online at www.crossfitsouthbay.com and mention the Net Live for your 15% discount on any of our membership packages.
This will make her feel real comfortable right here.
Yeah, it's all about making the guests feel comfortable.
The dean of women's volleyball.
She's on the Supreme Court.
She's on the Supreme Court. Gators.
Love the big finish. All right, our next guest is in her, I believe, 19th season at the University of Florida.
24th as a head coach, 20th at Florida is what I'm
saying. Oh, 20th at Florida, pardon me. Boasting incredible.
I did a game 2 weeks ago at Florida, so I should know that.
An incredible 706 wins versus 131 losses at Florida. Is the 16th coach in NC Division 1A history to eclipse the 700-win milestone.
And Barney, from 1991 on, that's the winningest program in women's college football.
And her team has been ranked number one for quite some time during this season, including now. We want to welcome into the Net Live head coach for Florida Gators, Mary Wise. Mary, thank you for joining us.
You bet. Glad to be a part of it.
All right. Mary, I want to start you with this. This has been a great season thus far. You guys are 22-1 overall, 15-0 in the SEC. What does your team do exceptionally well?
I think part of our success has been the fact that we're a team that's, because we've got run the 6-2, and in every rotation we've got four potential hitters, and we're hard to guard. Add that to the fact that Kelly Murphy is not a bad piece to start with, and I think we've got a group of players playing their best volleyball of their career, especially the senior class. And all combined, we've had some good wins this year.
Yeah, coming into the match yesterday versus Auburn, your team had won 18 straight sets. What did Auburn do to put your squad off balance?
Auburn played really, really well. It wasn't complicated what they were doing. We just weren't very efficient, and I thought they were really, really good. The first set that we won 25-23, pretty lucky to win that. And then at that point, they had only given up one unforced error, which meant we had to score 24 points on our own. Then they only went played even better in the second and third set. And so what they were, we've seen teams come out and play us very well but not be able to sustain it. But that wasn't the case with Auburn. They were flying around and chasing balls. And it was pretty good volleyball. And I think for the total match, they might have made in five sets less than 10 unforced errors. That's pretty amazing you think about it. That's how well they played.
And, of course, Florida went on to win in five sets. You're listening to Mary Wise on the Net Live. Mary, it's Geeter. I got to meet you a couple weeks ago and do your match for ESPNU. And I have to say, when I was there in Gainesville, when I looked at your team, I kind of saw what I call the perfect storm in terms of you had the experience with great seniors, you had some youth, especially with Chanel Brown, and then you have those juniors that have now been playing 2-3 years at such a high level. Do you really feel like this team has that right chemistry, and how fun has it been to be around these young women?
Well, it's been a lot of fun, and I think if you go all the way back to the ABCA showcase in Omaha, and we were up 2-0 against Iowa State, and then they kind of waxed us, 25-10, I think is a waxing, in the third set. And it was that point that the players were still trying to figure out who we were, with, new faces, new names, Tangerine Wiggs, the opposite player that transferred in, and as you mentioned, Chanel Brown, the freshman, and being able to win the fourth set, and then the very next day, less than 24 hours, beating Nebraska in Omaha. And in that match, and we're serving for set point up 2-0 in the third set. We're serving for a sweep. Not, to be in a position to do that, I think we really found ourselves in the very first weekend and thought, okay, we could be pretty good. And you're exactly right. It's a combination of the experience of new players playing so well, of a really, really strong nucleus. We took our lumps a couple years ago when these guys were freshmen and sophomores. You look around the country, there are a lot of teams that are going to take your lumps when you're starting freshmen. But keep those players healthy and on the court, and they're pretty hard to, tough out when they're juniors and seniors.
To see Kelly Murphy live, you just can't rave about her enough. I personally think it's a two-person race between Alex Kleiman and her for Player of the Year. Does anyone do more for their team than Kelly Murphy? You're around her every single day. How amazed are you by her?
We do ask a lot of her. And still, even at this point in her junior year, I feel like we're still scratching the surface of her talent level. Imagine if Kelly was just setting, if she was setting to 5-1 full-time, or just hitting. Remember, every rep she takes, she's splitting time, and yet she just gets better and better. She's got a range physically. It's like we talk about how she sees the game three-dimensionally, and she's got such a great range hitting, and yet she's never just set full-time if she had that opportunity. So it's a great talent, and because we've had other great players come here through here before. I think about Audie Cruz, a three-time first-team All-American, is that when Audie was here, we used to have moments where we'd say, okay, remember that play, because that talent's eventually going to graduate. Or just remember how much she bailed us out that rally. Kelly has plenty of those, so it's like embrace it, enjoy it, because it doesn't last forever. They do have to graduate.
Mary, serving and blocking has become such an important part of the game. When I look down the stats of your squad, you have 82 aces versus only giving up 45, and your blocking, you have 27 stuffs and 223 assists, and that number combined on the other side is only 170. So you're killing your opponents in those two phases of the game. We've seen the men's game shift that way. We just talked to Jay Hosak about the international game, and the international game on the female side is switching to a serve and pass power game. Do you see a similar shift in the NCAA?
Yeah, because I think what you're seeing is that the game is now one above the net, and we are morphing more and more as great athletes are choosing volleyball with the women's game, that we're blocking. It's always been important, but teams can just dominate. I don't know if you saw the Michigan-Penn State match last night on TV. The Penn State put on a blocking clinic, and it makes up for mistakes, and I think for our success, as you identified, a big part of it has been the serving and the blocking. And that has been really 3 years in the making. We just don't see players, and I think this is true around the country, you seldom do you see freshmen come in and light it up behind the service line. I think there are different theories behind that. One, they play an entire spring club in these convention center courts where they can't back up off the end line, or they have, they get their foot caught in netting, or it's like it's not emphasized or valued to the level of which it is at the college level. And so, 2 and 3 years ago, we weren't a very aggressive serving team, but that has changed, and it's taken time. And blocking is something else. It's like the one skill, the hardest skill to teach young players. It's not the fundamentals of blocking. It's the the system of blocking and how to block tactically.
Yeah.
But you understand, in high school, you know, they can jump, you know, 50 times a match, and how many balls are hit in bounds or, you know, hit in a position where they could block it. So those are two skills that just aren't emphasized that much at the club level, and that they take a while to develop.
I think the blocking is a skill that takes the longest to develop for any player as they go through the different levels. And one of the reasons for that is, you mentioned, technically, it's not hard to teach someone to put their hands over the net or move their feet. It's the time in which that it occurs, I think it is, because you have to react so quickly to what's going on across from you. Is that what takes so long, do you think, as a coach doing it, is getting them to react in time and recognize the situation?
Well, that's part of it, and blocking is a skill that involves a lot of gray. I think in terms of the, you know, when to block, and it's not, as you described, it's not just how, it's but when this hitter has this approach, you do this. When they're out of system, how, you know, where you set up your block that way. And most of the freshmen that come, not all, we've been very, like our two starting middles came into our program with really good blocking technique. I think a lot of that, they both played in the TCA club program out of Long Beach, and they came to us, Lauren Bledsoe and Cassandra Anderson, with really solid blocking skills. And now the difference is just we're asking them to do so many different things tactically.
Mary, there's been a lot of parity this year in the NCAA. We've seen teams go up, go down. Of course, Penn State, the defending champion, has struggled at times. They'll caught fire lately. Do you think the parity that we're seeing this year is good for the sport?
I do. I think what we're seeing, and I think it's important that fans understand, parity doesn't mean bad. It doesn't always mean good, but in this case, parity is good. It's good because there's so many good players and good teams out there. And I think it would be unfair to the sport if, just because we don't have Penn State, who in the past 3 years could have been their own Olympic team with all that talent. They practically are our women's current national team, and or at least half of the starting lineup. And so with all of as great as Penn State and Destiny Hooker were, just because they're not out there doesn't mean our game has backed off or any less. I think the parity is because there's so many great athletes playing our sport now, the 25-point sets of rally score, and I think what we are morphing into is something where men's basketball has been for, I think you could argue, since they put in the three-point line. I don't think it's good, you know, you could argue women's basketball has the issue. They got a couple of good teams, and they're really, really good, but there is certainly not parity in women's basketball. And I think that hurts their attendance. It hurts their interest. And now you wait in this NCAA tournament. First of all, the toughest job in the country is going to be the selection committee. How are you possibly going to seed teams?
Yep.
You're splitting hairs. I mean, in the olden days, before we had predetermined sites, we were all playing for our regional host, and you'd schedule that way. You did everything you could to be undefeated. And the four teams that were, they all hosted. And you could pretty much draw up your final four long before the tournament started. Well, that's not the case now. Now with predetermined sites, we can take chances in scheduling. I think that's great for the game. The parity is great for the game. I think the tournament is going to be a blast for fans. May not be fun for coaches, mind you, but it's really going to be fun for fans.
Now, Mary, you guys have the number one RPI. I think you're 10-1 against top 25 teams in the country. You came in preseason number 13, and you quickly moved up the ranks, and now you've been number one for about 5 or 6 weeks. At what point did you realize this might just be a special team I have here?
Well, as I said before, part of it was in Omaha, the wins over back-to-back Iowa State and Nebraska. But along that way, you know, the win against Colorado State, who's having another terrific season, as they do every year. And then we did lose in four at home in the Nike Big Four to Penn State, 25-23 in the fourth. But then the next day we're able to beat Texas. And as if those weren't enough matches, our opening weekend in the SEC was at Kentucky, at Tennessee. And when we came home, we get to go at Florida State. Now, you look at those three teams now, Tennessee is the only one that's still in the top 25. But let me tell you, those three teams were all playing really well. And those teams on the road are a really tough formidable opponent. So that was to get through that stretch, that's when we thought, okay, we have a chance. And the thing we sold the team on is it's wide open this year. I mean, you kind of feel for Texas when they had – I mean, Texas with Destiny could have won the national championship so many other years. They just used the wrong 3 years with Penn State.
You're listening to
they were so good.
Network.com. We're talking to head coach Mary Wise from the number one Florida Gators. Mary, we had a long discussion on this show last week about the firing of North Dakota State coach Eric Hinterstock and the allegations of verbal abuse and grabbing of players and so on. There have been some other rumblings of other programs and a couple of firings over the last couple of weeks with those kind of overtones. And with it, under that discussion, we wanted to ask you, how do you approach dealing with your players in stressful situations or in touching? We talked about it in the context of a male-female relationship, and of course, you being a female coach, it might be a little different, but we're interested in your insight on that topic.
I think in terms, obviously, different players are motivated different ways, and that it's the key is understanding the individual. And I once heard John Wooden speak. He came to Gainesville and spoke to our coaching staff. It's this great line is all players need a pat on the back, just some players need that pat a little bit lower. And I think in coaching, you just have to understand it's by the individual. There are some players that unless you're really in their grill and meaning you're really challenging them, they just haven't learned how to do that on their own. And they don't have to do that at all. They know how they can make those adjustments and motivate themselves. They don't need that. I've had players who say, I like it when you're on me. I perform better. So I think the key is understanding the individual. You can't, you know, no two kids are – I had two boys, and they are not alike. And the same way children aren't alike, yet 14, 15, 16 players, you can – from different families, you know they're not alike.
Do you think there's a little bit of a thornier issue for male coaches than for a female coach when it comes to the pat on the back or the pat on the butt?
I don't think there's any difference in gender when it comes to building relationships and trust. I think that's gender neutral. And so as long as there's a trust that's been developed between the player and the coach, then no, I don't think there's any difference.
Mary, you and I have never met, but I had the fortune of playing at Pepperdine University at a time when Harlan Cohen was volunteering, and Harlan used to come down and spend some summers with you and always spoke highly of you. Tell me a little bit about Harlan Cohen.
Well, that goes way back. You probably would have more better stories than I would.
Oh, that's it? He's kind of a crazy little old guy. I heard he was really mean when he was, you know, coach in 1968 with the Olympic team, and much nicer to me during my college career.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have nearly enough stories.
Oh, man. Okay, talking about the tournament and upcoming, you mentioned a couple of teams. Who don't you want to play come tournament time? Is there a team that's on a roll?
Yeah, I think there are a number of teams. You know, that's part of the running the tournament is so much based on matchups, and there are teams that you may match up very well against and teams that you don't, and you have to hope you're healthy. When we saw Stanford playing in the Big Four back here in Gainesville, and that's when they were running a 6-2, everybody was healthy, and I thought, well, those freshmen are only going to get better. And Alex was playing at a level of which I didn't think anybody else in the country would achieve. And I thought Stanford, I thought they separated themselves. But again, so much is staying healthy. Look at how USC has done. Cal, I think those are three teams. Washington's always been there. Penn State, based on their performance last night at Michigan. Nebraska, they've got so many weapons. I mean, there are a bunch of teams. That's why I think that the tournament will be so exciting. Look what Hawaii is. You know, when you can start a team like Hawaii's you put Kanani on any team, and you're going to be a tough out in the tournament. That's something you want to avoid. Just that player, let alone that terrific team. So I think there are a lot of programs that are going to go into it thinking, hey, we got a chance to make it to Kansas City, because I think there are a whole lot of teams. Unlike in the past, as I said, where you can pretty much pencil those four host teams, I think this year it's wide open.
Yeah, Mary, it's almost like in 2005, I believe that's when maybe Tennessee and Santa Clara made that miracle run to the Final Four. I mean, who knows? That could happen again this year. When I look at your team and you see like an Aaron Fleming, you see a libero, and then you have a freshman setter, Chanel Brown, who does it with Kelly Murphy, and I watch your team, I still think the keys, Christy Jekyll and Callie Rivers, your left-side attackers, I feel like when those guys are on, you guys are real tough to beat.
But you recognize in terms of women's collegiate volleyball, and I could say you could take it beyond just women's collegiate volleyball, but at the end of the day, it's going to be your outside hitters. Can they terminate? Can they terminate against two blockers out of system? And because the deeper you go in the tournament, the better the blocking is. And so who are the teams that have a chance? Well, USC, look at their left sides. Tara Murray with Cal. I mean, there are so many terrific left sides. And Callie and Christy that you referred to have done a fantastic job for us in their junior and senior year. And I think that they're a big reason why our record is what it is today.
Mary Wise is the head coach of the Florida Gators, has taken her team to 7 national semifinals over her career and looking for a Final Four and hopefully a finals appearance this year. Mary, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on the Net Live.
You are most welcome. Enjoyed it.
All right. Good luck for the rest of the season. We'll see you in
Thanks,
Kansas
Mary.
City.
Deal. Thank you, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. Good stuff.
Good to have Mary Wise on the show.
Yeah, good stuff. I like her. I like listening to her. That's a lot of fun.
You know, I just went over to the chat room, and a lot of people were saying how they like listening to her and stuff. And Brian had a question about no female coach had ever won the national championship in women's volleyball.
Ooh.
That's an interesting point. I kind of just came over too late. Ooh. But
you know what?
That's an interesting, real interesting point. She's been to the national championship game. They lost in 2003 to SC, but that McKaylee SC team was a joke. I mean, April Ross, Katie Oslofsky, Tracy Lindquist, no one's beating them. So she's been close, but no female coach.
I'll talk to her about that.
Yeah. Think about
the
that.
The ABCA show.
Yeah. Russ Rose, Soji, they've all, McKaylee, Dunning.
Yeah. Why is that? There's a lot of
Jim
female coaches.
Yeah.
They're going to face Mississippi State this week. I wanted to give a shout out to my former best man, Brandon Higa. He's assistant coach for Mississippi State going
Brandon
down to
Higa
face the Gators.
Was your best man in
that
your
is,
wedding?
That is correct. Do you know Brandon?
Absolutely. You know, he went to Northridge.
Northridge? No, he didn't go to Northridge.
He went to Pierce.
He went to Pepperdine. Pierce, Pepperdine.
Pierce, then Pepperdine. But I think he started at Northridge, I want to say. No, he didn't.
No,
I'm sorry.
No,
I actually coached Brandon. He came into our gym. He coached. I coached him when he was at when he's in club.
Ah, okay.
His senior year.
That
he
would
went
make
to Pierce
sense.
First. I kept thinking he went
that
to Northridge
make,
and then to Pepperdine.
That would make perfect sense. All right, we've got a couple of listener questions and a couple of other things to get to. We're going to organize our thoughts. We're going to be right back. Eric Sullivan's getting bitter, man. I'm getting texts this whole time.
Oh, he's not happy.
No, he's super grouchy, so maybe he'll call back, or maybe he's out, I don't know, getting lunch in Nebraska or something. Hey, we'll be right back here on the Net Live. Well, that was abrupt. About the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan?
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, "Sweet pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever."
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench, sub yourself in, pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
All right, welcome back to the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We've had an incredible show this far. Gator, you and I were just chatting about it. It's been a good one. We had
Head coach
Mary Wise, Florida Gators, on here. We had Jay Hossack talking about the women's international scene over there at World Championships in Japan.
Love Jay. Did a great job. We talked Phuket, Thailand, talked beach volleyball.
Talked about AVP going bankrupt. Officially
dead.
Going into bankruptcy.
You dead. Yelled at me.
That's right. Dead.
I need 22 points from Ben Roethlisberger to win my fantasy game. That's important to me.
Possible. Cincinnati's not very good. And we also talked about the 88 squad.
We'll continue
that discussion. We've got some more of that to go.
Reset that really quick because we're going to be doing that. And we're not going to do it this show, but we're going to do it again. What we did so people know.
Here's the theory. You take the 1988 team. That at that point.
88. In
not
their,
whatever the players became
in their
after
short
that,
shorts.
Whatever they were, 1988, could they make the national team today? Would they make the national team today? Would they be in the program? We did that last week. Go back and give it a listen. You can get it on iTunes for free. Search The Net Live and tell us what you think. We've got it on the Facebook. I asked specifically about Karch, about Timmons, about Sato this week on the show, on the Facebook page, and there was some interesting discussion, including Gary Sato, yeah. Pub and his brother.
Yeah, and next we're going to do the 92 bronze team.
That'll be next week.
Next
we'll for
week.
Sure do that. We'll for sure hit that next week, and we'll talk about it. So we've got that coming on. I think we may have Hans Stolfus here shortly. We'll see. We're going to hang on for a couple minutes, but a man who talks to this show occasionally, because I don't know what else he has to do. I mean, he's got two kids and a full-time job assistant coach at Nebraska, but he's always giving
us
a call.
Us, that's right. And he felt a little slighted today, but, I mean, our guests were on and
talking.
Wait.
700 career wins.
Yeah.
As a head coach.
7 national semifinals.
20 years, 25 years total, 20 years at one university.
We're going to let her talk as long as she wants to go.
A dean, a member of the Supreme Court of Coaching, another segment.
Yeah.
You get bumped for that.
You get bumped, E. Sully. You
too
get
bad,
bumped.
Dude.
Even though you're a great friend of mine, you get bumped.
Eric Sullivan from Nebraska.
Wow, man. I don't even know where to begin.
How about
don't know
you?
Where to begin. It's with you guys at the start, and now this is how I get treated.
Hey, Dave Reed was on here earlier with his college volleyball update.
You guys, wait a minute. I think Jim Rome is back from that commercial. Hold on.
Oh, he's going all Nick Lewin on it.
He's going Nick Lewin to the bathroom?
Hey, listen, he said your schedule's weak. You've done what you needed to do, but you don't have too many big challenges
he
coming up for the rest of your schedule.
He said they have a chance to win the national championship.
Oh, they're good.
Yeah, our schedule's weak, but we're third in the RPI. I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
No, remaining schedule, not your total schedule.
No, your remaining schedule.
Yeah, you know, he actually, not to throw him under the bus, but he had us play in Missouri again. We're done with Missouri. We beat them twice already. 3-0, 3-0, and so we've got a couple games that are big. We got Oklahoma at home, who's actually tied for third right now, or a half game out of third, and then Baylor at home and A&M on the road, which will be a tough place to play. So we've got some tough matches coming up. It's not, I don't know, in the Big 12, you know, nothing's super easy, so we got some work to do.
Eric, does 88 Karch make your Olympic team?
There we go. There we go.
I have him starting. Barton has him in the gym fighting for a spot.
You guys are throwing me into this. I was just praying that I get some props somewhere. I mean, Barney's got me like as the worst defensive player ever, but I can battle every once in a while.
Yeah, he called you, you know, one of the great passers, but defensively, you're just weren't at the level. I mean, I can't wait to get to your Olympic.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you too. I'm just kind of looking up at this little award I got up there in '98. I think Barney kind of remembers.
The best libero.
It does.
The best defensive player in the world, actually.
Would you like to tell everyone how you picked up that award? How you won by one hundredth of a point? What was the final straw?
I don't even remember, bro. I just see my trophy
Karch
up there.
Ball down the line.
No. Serve Sullivan to pass, overpasses. Guy takes a swing at it. Sullivan digs it. That's the one pushed him over
the
edge.
You know what? You bet. Guys do it for a triple double all the time.
Hey, Geeter, how many attempts do you think I get digging with Barney up there blocking? I mean, you get a lot of reps.
I'll tell you what, I said it. The best I've ever set was with Eric Sullivan on my team in Columbia because I didn't have to move.
Here's a story. I'm down in my basement hanging out with the kids this weekend, and someone had pulled out that old photo album. So I was just perusing through all those pictures, us running around with the flag, going nuts.
We won.
Two guys in the box, me and TK in the box.
Yep. Those are great days, buddy.
Touring the poker factory.
I have a question. What would a college national championship as a coach at Nebraska mean to you? I mean, you've won at a lot of different levels, my friend, but what would that mean to you to win a national championship in college, you know, coaching along with Cook?
You know, it's I don't know how to describe it. I think it's probably one of the more difficult things to do in volleyball. I mean, obviously winning a gold medal is probably up there at the top. In the men's game, you know, I was around such great players that it wasn't – well, obviously when we got to play Northridge in 93, it was kind of a given. But
can we just –
once. Totally put everybody under the bus right now.
Go on.
But, you know, it wasn't expected, but we knew that we were always going to be in it. And I think there's so much parity in the women's game, especially this year, that it's such a hard thing. I mean, to go through a 64-team tournament is such a hard thing to do. And so, you know, I think that part of it is such a challenge and would be such a rewarding thing to be able to accomplish. I mean, in the men's, you get to the Final Four and it's two games. It's not like you got to grind through six matches. So, yeah, it would be awesome. I mean, definitely something that would be a proud moment in my volleyball career.
All right, Eric. Anyone else you want to put under the bus before we put you off?
He got sentimental right there, and that's what we needed.
I
liked him. Something different. Let's get him speaking real instead of heckling us.
Heckling? I can't even get on the air to heckle you guys.
I mean, I'm sorry we were loaded with guests today.
I got to beg and text my way on. You're calling Japan because you won't want to put a guest on. That's a local Skype call.
You're all French fries on the board. That's the only way I know
it's
you.
Get the people from Nebraska listening, Esau. That's your job.
There you go.
I'm trying. Well, I can't get them to listen. You guys don't put me on.
God.
Trying, man.
Eric, thanks so much for calling and contributing to the show,
Eric,
as usual.
You are going to be valuable in these next coming weeks because the tournament time is coming. So get your game hat on.
Let me know. You guys, you know, if you want some info, give me a call.
Say hi to Amanda.
Shoot me a text.
All right. Thanks, Esau.
All right, we'll do.
Talk to you. See ya.
Later, Sully.
All right, Eric Sullivan, usual friend of the show. Hey, we got another caller, 612. Minneapolis area code. You're on the net live. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
That's Hans if it's Minneapolis.
That's Hans. Stolfus.
Oh, hey. Sorry.
There we go.
You changed the Minneapolis area code, bro.
Okay.
We
mentioned the Pro Beach Volleyball Association, correct? The PBVA, on this show a few times. One of the entities looking to fill some space in the beach scene. And the man behind a lot of this effort has been Hans Stolfus, former AVP professional, former AVP employee, and about town now. So, Hans, fill us in on what's been happening. We know there have been a lot of player meetings, and you're kind of a man to know.
What exactly do you want to know? Hit me with anything, and I'll try and break it down as clearly as possible.
Hey, what's the point of the PBVA? Are you guys a players organization that's looking to sanction tournaments, or are you looking to run tournaments like the AVP eventually did?
No. Definitely not a tour. Just an association. The biggest thing in 06 and 07 were the exploding contracts Leonard Armato was putting in front of our face. By the way, is music too loud in the background? Because I'm at Fashion Island Mall.
Well,
is that right?
Be going okay. You're doing a little shopping. Yeah, keep going.
All right, good. Basically, in 06 and 07, Jason Ring and Todd Rogers sat down with a group of others, but including the attorney Dan Grigsby and amongst others, to basically formulate the association, which was for one purpose, and that was to have collective bargaining, and it was more of a union at the time.
Unify the players, correct? You wanted to unify the players under one umbrella to improve your negotiating possibilities with the AVP, i.e. Leonard Armato, at that time.
Absolutely correct. So the real purpose was just to get away from that contract that he was putting in front of our face that stripped us of all our rights. And that was the focus and the goal. And I would be lying if I said that's still not the focus. And everybody's like, well, there's nothing to fight against right now. Well, the biggest issue is just the exclusive contracts.
Okay, the PBVA at the time sort of died on the vine, as I recall. It went nowhere and was squashed. There were a couple of different factions at work with that. So now with the Void, you're looking to renew that and get the players together and get them as one voice and trying to push the sport forward. Is that the general idea?
That's the general idea. Basically, everybody has been an assumption you have to invest a ton of money into an organization that's taking a lot off the top to run beach volleyball. It's never been about making the sport or the athletes profitable. It's always been about making whoever invests in the sport profitable. It's always been everyone that talks about it. So it's like, okay, how can I make money if I do this? Oh, everybody. I've had conversation after day after day with people who are like, okay, if I invest in this, how do I make money? There's never, ever one single concern on how can we make the sport or the athletes more profitable, ever. It's literally, okay, if I invest $350,000 in an event, how little can I pay out the players to get a really good showing and good turnout and get the sponsors there to love it? It's never, ever been about how can I make the athletes profitable.
Yeah, well, I think that's got to be part of it. If you're an investor, if you're going to have a business and start a business, you're going to have to make some profit.
Sure.
And then you have to have some sustainable group as the players. Now, my question is, what is the players' attitude towards what is happening now? There was some announcement or thought that the AVP might run a few tournaments. It seems like that's dead with them actually declaring bankruptcy and the debts that they have incurred. The recent announcement today with the press release about IMG and USAV. You have the Corona Open, which has stated they're going to increase their prize money, although it doesn't seem to really be to any sort of massive professional level. And, of course, the FIVB Tour is still out there. What are players saying? What are they doing? What are they planning to do for this upcoming year?
I would be lying if I said that most players are just kind of moved on. That's the sad part. That's the destructive part.
They have moved on.
Yeah. I mean, it's really kind of devastating to talk to great players like John Mayer and Billy Allen and literally sit down and eat dinner with them and have them look me in the eye and say they have not played and they have no interest in playing volleyball. Well, not that they have no interest, but there's nothing to play for.
Yeah, I talked to Aaron the other day.
It's sad.
He's got a job.
It's very sad. Yeah, Aaron's got a job selling ice cream. I mean, I don't know if that's a good move for him. I mean, he loves himself some ice cream. But, they moved on. And that's what's sad. I mean, unless we actually come up with something and something fast for them to have inspiration to continue playing, we're going to lose a lot of great athletes.
You guys have been holding meetings and getting a lot of players in the room. Who have been some of the more vocal people who stepped up really to talk about the future and try and plan for the future?
You know who our biggest advocates are? And I really, really, I couldn't share enough love for these guys right now because there are a distinct group of athletes that have zero interest in fighting anymore. They don't want to fight for it. They fought for 10 years. They've been beaten down by all former management, by former organizations running us. They have no interest in going to war for the betterment of the sport or for their own careers or anything. They just want to stop.
Who is that?
I don't want to name names right now. But put it this way, most of the athletes have been around for 10 years.
Are these the big name athletes? Because we've talked on this show.
Some of the big names
need to sort of take a bullet and maybe take a little bit less money to leverage their celebrity or their abilities, their marketability, into reviving the sport itself. Do you get the bigger names that are out there that's the case from a Phil, from a Todd? You mentioned that Todd has been behind this effort of the PBVA for a long time. Are they on board?
Yeah. Not everybody. No. I would be lying if I said everybody was on board. Say it again?
You're telling me there's still pretty good division between the players, that even despite the crisis and what's happened, and really you're mentioning the lack of opportunity for professional beach volleyball players, they still cannot unify for the sake of their own sport.
That's what's so disheartening, in my opinion. But let's get back to the really, really positives for just a second. John Hyden has been the biggest advocate I've ever met. He wants to canvas and go door to door. The guy has been nothing but an absolute champ in this regard. All he cares about is the sport. All he cares about is playing. And he has a 5-year vision for this. The guy's 38. You know John. You played with John. John is literally willing to go door to door with me. And there's people out there like, I mean, obviously Casey Patterson is as passionate about this game as anyone on earth. And I couldn't say thanks enough to him as well. There's 20 athletes just like these two that I'm mentioning that are all in. All they want to do is just make this as great as possible and find as many opportunities and open it up. Because like you said, there's a million different tours. mean, there's 157 tournaments over 13 tours held in 2010. And that's with a shortened AVP season down to 7 tournaments. So there are tournaments everywhere going on. And when we talk about, like, with the PBVA about umbrellaing tournaments, everybody's like, oh, you're going to form a tour? And I'm like, I don't know if I'd ever really call it a tour. But there are promoters in every different city. John Nathanson in Minneapolis. There's promoters in Missouri. Bruce White in New Orleans. There are promoters that want to run tournaments that have never been allowed to run tournaments because of the AVP. Now, those tournaments might not be a $200,000 open. They might not be the professional standard we're used to at the moment, especially with the FIVB putting $300K into their normal, just everyday events, not even Grand Slams. But these people can build up. These people can they can run a tournament for, say, $80,000, maybe get up to $100,000, maybe get up to $125,000, maybe get up to $150,000, build a fan base, sell tickets, sell alcohol, which is huge because we can't do that on the beach, and they're in locations that have fans. And I know that Southern California loves to believe that they're the only place in America that has sand volleyball players competing, but I beg to differ. In the summer, you go anywhere else in America, and the league's going on in Atlanta. You should go to Atlanta for a week and just see how many people are playing sand volleyball during the week. There's a league every single night, Monday through Friday, and it's packed.
Hey, Hawk,
and there are more people. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought, and then I'll ask.
Well, no, I was just going to say those kind of people need opportunities to hold tournaments. And all we're saying is if we have all the players come together, no one signs an exclusive contract with anybody, you can start generating tournaments nationwide with promoters under, just like the FIVB, a certain set of sanctions. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going out and setting up tournaments. It merely means we're allowing players to compete in these tournaments and go and get paid and have a national ranking system that literally covers the entire spectrum. And I know it's very ambitious, and everybody's like, well, I don't know how you're really going to accomplish all this. But it's very possible. And the only way I see us failing is from a lack of imagination. If we honestly believe we can't be better than we are, then we've already failed.
Now, you had mentioned that there's 20 guys out there that are jumping on board. Can you give us some names that aren't on board yet?
I'll tell you. There are some reservations with Todd Rogers. Todd was the biggest advocate in 06 and 07. He wanted to create it. And now, it's challenging. I mean, the top athletes, Elaine Youngs, Nicole Brana, they want the top level. They want the AVP style format to be back. They want to play in front of big crowds. They want the big money, the big purses. They want to play for 20,000, 25,000, in the finals. And rightfully so, they deserve that. They've earned it. It's going to be a little bit harder for, say, certain females at the top level of the game to trust me unless they sit down and have a conversation with me, because some of them, frankly, just don't know me. So it's been much easier to communicate with the men in this regard as far as an association. If I had a delegate, let's say, for the women, it'd be probably a lot easier.
When you sit across the table from your friends, like a Jake Gibb, a John Mayer, a Billy Allen,
yeah,
Aaron Rockfogel, what do you sell to them? What are you saying to them to get them to jump on board and to think we are going to have some sort of volleyball next summer in 2011?
Well, okay, I basically break it down and say, listen, you've got the USAVB Championship Series. Obviously, they just announced this morning their official partnership with IMG.
Yeah.
You've got, I'm having daily communications with weekly communications with Nick Lewin, trying to figure out exactly what he's planning to do. As much as I know, he's in an
undisclosed location somewhere in a bathroom, as far as I know. Last time I heard.
I heard that interview. It's interesting. I couldn't even tell you exactly. I obviously declared bankruptcy last Friday. The two Fridays ago. And he still was trying to sell it. It's a prepackaged bankruptcy deal was what I heard was going to be formulated with the Kent Stephens Investment Group, which is Bob Beyer. And he's Chaparral Investments, and I've heard all the things going on, but I just spoke with Nick 2 days ago, and he still has control. He has not sold it, and he's still planning on putting something together. And I don't know if that's still planning on putting something together to eventually sell it. I'm not sure. But we need tournaments. Go ahead.
Hans, do the players think that this can really get back to a level that can support them professionally and provide the income that an investor is looking for?
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
Got about 2 minutes.
The investor concept. The investor concept. Everybody's, we need investors. We need investors to put money in. We've pretty much done it for 30 years. And although we've only declared bankruptcy twice, we've really gone bankrupt 6 times. We've had someone save the day at the 25th hour. Go ahead.
It's an unfortunate point to make. We've had Jason Hodel here on the show, and he said that not once in all the years the AVP has existed have they made money. Now that's,
no.
They've paid it out, and people have told me, oh, they made all this money. It's because they paid it out in these other years. Fine. But you're still paying out, even if you're making $1 million, $10 million. It doesn't matter. If you pay out more than that, you don't make money. There's no planning for the future. And we know that there's been tremendous money loss over the last couple of years. And I said on this show, including today, that I don't think it's a business. I think it's an ad vehicle. I think it's a great advertisement. And any money that falls off to the players or any money that falls off to someone who is involved with the administration of it, it is a cost of advertising, not an expense against revenue.
Yeah, I agree.
How does that change? How do you get an investor to put money in and say this is going to change without a Philip Anschutz type person with soccer who's just going to say I'm going to lose $20 million a year and that's okay with me because it's my hobby? It has to be a business for someone. How can that change, and how, and where has that discussion gone with the players?
Well, you know how you just said it's not a business. It's currently not a business. One, you're absolutely correct. You go to a beach. You're paying the Coastal Commission fees. You can't charge for tickets. You can't sell alcohol. You can't sell. Only thing you can sell is merchandise. But unfortunately, we don't have any merchandise industry whatsoever. So you literally can't go to our Southern California sand and make a single dime. So you have to generate all your revenues from sponsors. And the sponsors aren't covering your media buy or your actual production costs. So you're setting up this stadium. We're $250,000 out before we even blow a whistle. We don't have any money coming in from the actual venue. We're not selling any tickets, and when we do sell tickets, on the Coastal Commission only allows us to keep 20%. So the deals are all off. So when we first sat down and said, okay, well, how do we make this in any way, shape, or form profitable to anyone who wants to get involved? Well, maybe you go to a location that sells, it can allow you to sell alcohol. Maybe your alcohol sales become your number one revenue stream. You go to a location where, oh, hey, how about this? How about you create a T-shirt that allows you to get into the venue, and it costs you $25 instead of a $20 ticket. And now you get in, you're branded with whatever the T-shirt says, but now you get to keep 100% because you're selling merchandise just like surfing does, and the Coastal Commission can't take their 80% off the top. I mean, there's different ways to do this, but no one, and I repeat, no one is talking about them. No one. No one is thinking 1 minute of how they can actually generate revenues at these events. They're only saying, okay, this is what it's going to cost. How do we get enough sponsors to cover it? Let's just keep – it's like let's keep building the expenses and just do whatever we can to get sponsors to cover the expenses.
Hans, we want to keep following the story. We want to keep knowing what's happening with the PBVA. We really appreciate you calling. We're kind of running out of show today, but this is something that we're
no problem.
Follow, and I know that there's a ton of questions out there about the beach and people that care about what's going to happen with the beach in the future.
Right.
Hey, we appreciate you spending time, and we'll definitely have you on again and keep us updated as to what's happening.
Can I tell you one more thing before we go? Take 2 seconds.
Hit it.
We're going to live stream in December. We're going to live stream at Corona Del Mar, and we're going to basically get the players, and we're going to try and do it once a week. And we're literally going to try and encapsulate the athletes that the nation still loves and the sport still loves. And we're going to try and get it out and let people see what these players are still here. They haven't disappeared. They're not going anywhere. And that we want to give them as much love as pub as we can.
Great.
That's what we want to start doing in December.
Get the information to us when you got it all lined up, and we will pub it here on the show.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right. Cool. Thank you, Hans.
Later, Hans.
See you.
Bye.
All right. I want to quick move on to a couple of callers. I think we have Brian McDermott from Illinois. Brian, what's your question?
I was hoping that I wasn't going to miss him, but my question, because he brings up a good point. It's like with the investor model, they're always looking to make profits. All about that. And part of the issue, you know, you look at the main sports, NBA, NFL, et cetera, and those teams are city-based. They actually have something the fan can identify with. Other than the hardcore volleyball fan, outside of SoCal, there's not many people that can name more than, you know, obviously the gold medalists or whatnot. It's just not – there's no one to identify.
Arch Karai, actually, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Or,
you know, but
on the other
side. My point is you know, I think that to move forward, and it would take a lot of work. You got to get people that are, you know, represented by a city. So you know, rather than have everyone train in SoCal, you know, is it going to affect certain players worse than more? Yes. But, like, Cincinnati, great example of, like, a city that embraces, like, their group volleyball embraces volleyball. So if you get a couple teams in major cities, a couple of the, you know, the ones that have to deal with snow, maybe they have to look at, like, an indoor sand dome. I know Chicago has a private group right now that's putting together, supposedly, 11 sand courts that's going to be underneath one of those golf bubbles. You know, if you can get it city versus city, when tournaments happen, now you've got fans that identify with them. You know, like I'm from Chicago. I identify, even if I'm not there, I've watched the Bulls, the Bears. I keep an eye on what they're doing. You just don't have that in volleyball because, let's face it, the majority of them are sitting in SoCal. So, you know, would it make a lot of different things? Absolutely, you know. But if you want sponsors to get interested and to be able to, you know, go back to the 80s, you know, talk about Speedo and all those companies, you're going to have to, you know, appeal to a group bigger than the SoCal group. So the way to do that is you just got to expand more. And that's why I think, you know, would there have to be a lot of stuff done? Yes. But this is a good opportunity to try some outside-the-box things. I'd be really interested to see if a group was, you know, looking to have city versus city. You can have the players, you know, get involved with the city, run camps for kids or something like that, run adult clinics. You know, and that, and then people come out to watch their tournaments because they actually have people they can identify with.
Brian, appreciate the call. Like the thoughts.
No problem. Talk to you later.
All right. Yeah, Brian brings up a good point about the allegiance of things, and I've talked about kind of the motocross model before, where can you have a factory team? It's all about teams, and you have two or three bikes under one team. Here, could you have two or three teams under one sponsorship tent, and then you set up a war that's greater than player versus player? You have a war of Red Bull versus Rockstar. Or Chicago versus Cincy.
It's interesting that Brian brings that up because I remember a few years back when Leonard first came on board and we were all talking about how we could make it more, you know, popular with fans that don't know these big names. And one of my things was, you know, people root for their teams. And through that, we all kind of came to that. That's why we had those rules where you had to stay with someone for six tournaments to qualify for the Best of the Beach tournament. You know, they were trying to get teams to stay together and not just dump each other every week. If you were a top, you know, 15 to 20 team, you would stay together because you had a shot to get into those end of the year tournaments.
Right.
You know, and that is kind of a way to build that team concept up because everyone knows Kerry Misty, Tom Phil, because they represented you, the United States. That was your team. Jake and Rosie have been together for a long time, but when the team split up a lot, it's hard to identify with, you know.
Here's what I'm taking from Hans's call. There's still a lot of questions. A ton of questions.
No doubt, man.
Nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows what the right answer is.
I mean, everyone I met in Hawaii that I saw I hadn't seen in a long time, it's the first thing they ask me. And I have no answers.
And
it's all what you hear and what you think. And
I appreciate the players wanting to make money and no one's ever focused on us and being able to be professionals and this and that. But, hey, if you're going to invest in this thing, you have to be making money. You're not going to put $5 million, $10 million, $15 million in there. RJSM Partners, Nick Lewin, you cannot believe that he invested in that thing thinking he would lose all that money. No, he invested in that thinking here was a property I could make money with, and he had to figure out how to do that. He was unable to do that. Leonard obviously got to a point where he didn't feel like he could do that any longer. It's gotten to that point several times where people just cannot make money. Leonard pushed hard and fast to try and get that thing over to a professional thing rather than just an advertising entity. It didn't work, obviously. So somebody has to figure out how to make money at it. And that investor is going to have to make money before the players make money.
Yeah.
Bottom line. And the players are going to have to decide if they can be bought for whatever the investor is offering, whoever that investor is, whether it's USAV and IMG, whether it's Corona Wide Open or the FIVB or whomever it is. The FIVB may be the only entity with enough money to buy the top players in today's game.
I agree with you 100% on that. And that's the unfortunate truth, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it. I'm not trumpeting it.
Yeah, no, it's
great. Beach volleyball died. Woo! No,
it's an awful thing. But
it's not good for the sport.
You know.
Not at all good for the sport. Hey, we've reached the end of another great episode of The Net Live. I think another good episode. There you go. 90 seconds. Thank you, Blog Talk, for the warning. We've reached the end of another episode. We hope that you're getting us on iTunes. You're checking it out. You're emailing us, thenetlive@gmail.com. We listen to all those emails. We read them. We check them out. Get out there on Facebook. Fan us on Facebook. Get the information throughout the week. A lot of good stuff happening.
Tell your volley friends to listen.
Get on Volley Talk and pub us, good or bad.
What's up, dude?
Good or bad. Hate on us, that's fine.
I don't care.
We'll answer that. I'm Kevin. He's Geeter. We lost long ago. He might be back next week.
I need Roethlisberger to get me 22 points.
Hey, we'll see you again next week. Thanks for tuning in. The Net Live, we are out.